This is Hereafter, and I'm your host, Megan Devine. Each week, we tackle big questions from therapists, doctors, and other helpful folks that let us explore how to show up after life goes horribly wrong. This week, palliative care for everyone. Wait, what? Isn't palliative care something hospice does before somebody dies? Well, yes, but that is just part of the story. Broadly speaking, palliative care describes the stuff we do to help somebody manage emotional pain. Sometimes that pain stems from a terminal diagnosis, but it also applies to chronic illnesses, non-life-threatening injuries, and even, in my opinion, grief itself. Palliative care is like symptom relief for the emotional challenges of being alive. Doesn't that sound really interesting? Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back with my guest, palliative surgical care specialist, Dr. Red Hoffman, right after this first break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Before we get started, one quick note. While I hope you find a lot of useful information in our time here together, this show is not a substitute for skilled support with a licensed mental health provider or for professional supervision related to your work. Content warning, everybody, this episode contains brief, non-graphic mentions of both suicide and terrorism. Hey, friends. So if you listened to the intro to the show today and you were like, I don't understand any of what she just said, you are definitely not alone. Palliative care is a term used in the medical field, but even inside the medical industry, most people don't know what it is. It's one of those if you know, you know things. And if you don't know, there's almost no reason why you should. At least, that is the old way of looking at things. Hopefully by the end of the show today, you will have a real working knowledge of what palliative care is, and my secret hope, you'll even start seeing the whole world through a palliative care lens. You don't even have to work in healthcare to slip on those palliative care glasses. I really mean it when I say that palliative care is for everybody, and I'm pretty sure my guest today would agree with that. Dr. Red Hoffman is a board-certified trauma surgeon trained in surgical care and hospice and palliative medicine. She's one of the leading voices advocating for palliative medicine across all departments and subspecialties in medicine, and she's the host of the Surgical Palliative Care podcast. Dr. Hoffman's life has been marked by sudden and often violent losses, as we'll hear about in the show. Again, disclaimer, no graphic details are shared, though we do briefly mention both terrorism and suicide. Now, she and I met on Twitter, which is usually a platform where people yell at each other about various things. I've actually been yelling about various things on Twitter lately. It's also, though, like a place to find really lovely colleagues and potential friends who geek out on the same things you do. At least that's how Twitter is for me, even if I do use it to rant about things, too. So, Red, welcome to the show. I am so happy to have you here. Before we get too deep into all of the things that we could possibly talk about, I think it's actually important for us to define what palliative care is. So, really quick, can you tell us what palliative care is as it relates to surgery?
Sure. So I think there's two ways to look at it. One, palliative care is an incredible specialty in that when you are trained as a go to a fellowship in hospice and palliative medicine, there's like 10 different specialties that feed into this fellowship. It's like no other fellowship in the country. So you can be a surgeon, a family medicine doctor, a psychiatrist, a radiation oncologist, an emergency medicine doc, and go complete a palliative care fellowship. So that's why I think it's such a fascinating specialty. So we have surgeons who practice hospice or palliative care, but we also have this field of surgical palliative care. And that's kind of a term that came up through the American College of Surgeons and Dr. Jeffrey Dunn, who I call, he's the father of surgical palliative care. And that's really palliative care specifically for surgical patients. Part of what we offer when we're doing surgical palliative care is palliative surgeries. So if you have a bowel obstruction, we might put in what's called a venting G-tube so that we could drain your stomach, or we might do an intestinal bypass. Surgeries that are not meant to cure, but that are meant to deal with symptoms only. So that's one thing that we do is palliative surgery, but it's not all about surgery. It's again about symptom management, about walking the patient through any complications they might have, and then perhaps saying, okay, we're ready for hospice and guiding them through that. Again, addressing the emotional and mental component of disease processes and of dealing with life-limiting illnesses, and then also the spiritual support.
Yeah. What's really cool to me about palliative care and surgical palliative care is we're talking about there is a condition here that we can't fix for you. Not just there's no cure like terminal illness hospice, but there's no permanent fix for this condition, illness situation in your body. What we can do is manage and mitigate the suffering that this condition causes for you. And that, like, to me, that is what palliative care is. It's a mitigation of suffering to the best of our capacity, knowing that we can't fix what's actually wrong for you. And for me, like, little tiny sidebar before we get into our first listener question, like, to me, grief itself is a palliative care condition, right? Like, you can't fix grief for somebody. You can't undead the person who's dead. You can't restore a body back to full mobility after an injury or an illness that changes that. Like, we can't fix that central vacancy, but we can do what we can to mitigate the suffering that comes with those kinds of losses. So to me, you know, new specialty over here, like, grief is palliative care work. But that is a tangent for another day, because I feel like our listener question for us today really touches on all the things that we've just started talking about. So I want to make sure that I get our question in before we go too far down the fascinating rabbit hole of you and your work and palliative surgical care. Okay, you ready for the question?
I am.
All right, let's go. It is a two-parter, so we're going to answer part one first, and then we're going to get to part two. So don't worry, everybody. Part two, we will totally answer it. All right. Hi, Megan and Red. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only one in my surgical department who cares about the mental and emotional health of our patients. I try to talk about palliative care with my colleagues, like help them understand why we should talk about ways to reduce emotional suffering, that there even is emotional suffering related to illnesses and diagnoses and surgery, but I don't think they get it. So I have two questions. One, can you talk about ways to get your coworkers to understand the need for palliative care, or at least to be knowledgeable about palliative care across all departments? And two, how do you stay true to what you know when the industry doesn't seem to care about emotional and mental health? So I think this question here is something that a lot of people in healthcare have, and actually a lot of people like in the non-healthcare world too, but how do I get my colleagues to pay attention to the emotional well-being of our patients?
So one, I always think I can't change how you're going to treat me, right? But I can model how I want you to treat me by treating you that way. And so I think continuing to do what you're doing. So doing this good work and knowing in your heart that it's good work and just continuing to model that. So for many years, especially in residency, before I completed a fellowship, I mean, I think people thought I was nuts, but I just kept doing it. And the patients responded well, the families responded well, the ancillary staff, I think always the nurses and the chaplains, like, really saw the benefit of that work, even if my teachers didn't see it. But eventually they saw it because everyone else was seeing it. So I think kind of just staying on that path. You know, two, for me, I'd say, I don't know where this person is in their career, but for me, it was very important for me to complete additional training to kind of give myself that legitimacy. So now people do listen because I say, okay, I'm board certified in hospice and palliative medicine. So there's a lot of training programs in the country. You know, there's master's degrees for all different providers who are already engaged in healthcare. And even just like Harvard has, you know, this online course that goes for several weeks. So I think maybe doing that extra training so you have that little legitimacy behind you is often very useful.
I love that. I mean, one, that professional street cred, right? Like, that legitimacy is really, really important, especially when you're bringing something sort of new to the clinical and medical space, especially something that has something to do with feelings, right? Like, having that legitimacy behind you is really, really helpful, or can be really helpful. And as you said, like, it deepens your knowledge and your understanding so that you have a really strong foundation for the role modeling that you're doing. I love that. Spoken as a true educator, like, what is the most effective education? Well, it is role modeling the behavior that you want to see and letting the people around you see the outcome of that behavior, right? We're all about the clinical and medical outcomes in this profession, right? So we want to see, oh, wow, treating the human being like a whole human being actually has some really positive, clinically significant outcomes. And we make people hungry to learn more about that. Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to frame that.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. But especially when you make your nurses happy, because those nurses go and then kind of spread the word amongst the other members of the team. And so for me, that was like, bedside nurses have a ton of moral distress. They're with these sick patients, you know, 12 hours a day, 3 or 4 days in a row. They see the suffering in a way that physicians never do. So when the physicians are addressing that suffering and addressing their suffering, the nurses' suffering as well, you also get that, what you said about street cred. And then they talk about you to the other physicians. And
yeah.
So I think that works as well.
Yeah. I mean, shouting out to the nurses. I can hear all the nurses in the audience being like, oh my God, you mentioned us, right? Like, nurses make the world go round.
Yeah.
For real. I love that aspect of it too. Like, this is showing your patients what it's like to be treated like a real human being, and the people around you are picking up on those skills. The nurses are picking up on it. You know, hopefully the other docs and the other providers are picking up on it. The patient is also picking up on it. And they may not know how to articulate why you're different, but they know that you're different. And that has a ripple effect out into the world. So I feel like so much can feel wrong in our medical industry. Focusing on those interactions, those moments, that evidence of things being done really beautifully and skillfully, and the impact that those interactions have, I think, like, those are the things that we want to focus on and enlarge and fight for, right? That is how we start changing the culture. Yeah.
Even in the worst of times, you know, even in the trauma bay, in the setting of imminent death, not always, you know, I never want to romanticize death, because sometimes death is just ugly.
Sucks. Yeah.
But sometimes it really is just some room for beauty and for grace and for a lot of love, even in those really horrible moments.
Yeah. I think there's always room for beauty and love and grace inside the horror. What other time is there? And I think there's that. We don't want to conflate. I love that you put the little asterisks next to that. Like, we don't want to conflate those two things, that, like, looking for the beautiful things makes the horrible traumatic things okay. That is not the equation we're talking about here. We're talking about, how do we companion these really difficult, terrible, traumatic experiences for ourselves as providers, but also for families and for people experiencing these things. Like, we can bring beauty and grace into those moments by paying attention to the actual human beings in the room. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to get into part two of that question about how you stay true to yourself inside an industry that doesn't seem to care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
We've been talking with Dr. Red Hoffman about surgical palliative care and why everyone in medicine needs to be talking about ways to manage emotional pain. In the second half of the show, we're talking about Dr. Hoffman's personal experience and how that affects her work. She and I jumped right into this topic, but for context, you should know that Dr. Hoffman's father was killed in a terrorist attack in 1993 when she was 19 years old, and her partner died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 2021 following a traumatic brain injury sustained in 2020. Let's get back to our conversation. So in one of your media appearances, you say that your dad's death and the grief that followed has really shaped how you think about medicine and death and grief, that in many ways it's shaped both your career and your outlook on life. The recent death of your partner by suicide also influences not only how you see grief, but it's made you really consider our responsibilities as care providers to really listen to the pain we see around us. In a profession that continues to insist that grief and really any emotional pain should be cleared up quickly if we talk about it at all, and insists that doctors should remain stoic and unmoved by their work. Whew, we actually had a good long rant about that before. But coming back to part two of our listener question here, given all of that like sort of industry institutional avoidance of pain, how do you personally stay true to what you've learned and what you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I always say every single shift I work, I cry. One of the great things I learned in my hospice and palliative medicine fellowship was it's okay to cry, but you should never be the one crying the most in the room, which sounds like silly, but I honestly think it's really important. So, right, it's not about me, but crying is like an emotional release valve, just like sighing. I sigh a lot too. I just let it go. I learned very early on in my career, like my first death in medical school, that if I did not let it go, I was going to get really sick and start acting out all over the place. So now I just kind of let it go. So I think that's one way. And the other thing is, you know, my experience in my fields, trauma and palliative care, is that all my partners do talk about are rough days. And I talk about it with like the nursing staff and the chaplains and who's ever in the room during a bad trauma. I mean, everyone's having feelings. And so I just talk about it, you know, I just kind of keep everything moving and flowing through me. And I think because of my experiences, I don't apologize anymore. This is just who I am. But I also think because I'm a surgeon and because of my training, I also know how to appropriately disassociate, right? I mean, that's one thing we do in surgery. That drape goes up, you get to work. In some ways, you have to just do your job, right? So sometimes that's a little challenging. You turn it on and turn it off. But I think because my training just taught me that, it's something that has come naturally to me over the years. There's a time to feel feelings, and then there's a time to get back to work, because the patients also need you to be thinking clearly, right? They want a very loving doctor, and it's great to have a loving surgeon, but they also need a clear mind that can diagnose and treat appropriately.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you really sort of nail the binary here of like, you can either be one or the other, right? Like you can be a compassionate, present surgeon who understands emotions, or you can be good at your job. Right. But you can't do both. And I love like this, like elegant, skillful use of compartmentalization and dissociation. Right. Like that is a skill.
Yeah. And I noticed, you know, certainly in this recent grief of my partner's suicide, that like I became a little unskillful when I went back to work. I call it a little messy. And then I realized like I'm at work, and yes, I carry this grief. And I think this grief has taught me so much. And you know, I think I was already a great doctor and surgeon, but maybe this made me a little bit better, but it's not all about me. Like I have to get back to work too. And so I felt at the beginning that I kind of lost some of my boundaries that I have worked really hard to establish over the years. And I noticed it pretty quickly. And then I kind of worked with my therapist and just did a lot of work with myself about like, sometimes I like to think when I'm walking into the hospital, like leave your stuff at the door. You know, this is not me time. This is you time, because I'm taking care of you right now.
Yeah. Like you can be informed and influenced by your personal experience. I love that you said you weren't improved by your partner's suicide, right? Yes. It's almost like our sphere of understanding expands. That's not an improvement. That's just a fact, right? Now I have extra information to impact and influence the work that I do and who I am in the world and what I see. There's an essay of yours where you say, I also learned that my feelings of guilt and responsibility were extremely common. The idea of perceived responsibility resonated deeply with me and fed into my sense of failure. How did I, as a board certified trauma surgeon, allow my brain injured partner to die on my watch? This kind of goes back into what you were saying about I'm both people when I walk through that door of the hospital, right? I am the person who lived this really intense personal experience, and I am a provider who needs to show up and be skillful and clear-headed and do the work in front of me.
You know, I think that's very common in survivors of suicide loss to feel very responsible for the suicide and for the actions that the other person took. And so that's that idea of perceived responsibility. You know, what I've kind of had to come to terms with is that I'm really only responsible for myself and my own behavior. And how can I improve upon that over time? Like, that's just a ongoing task and lesson for me. But I do know I'm also, as I'm walking into the hospital, I'm like responsible for my patients. And so like that idea has to just shift to like them.
Yeah, exactly. It's that facility of shifting, right? Mm-hmm. What is the focus in the room? I love that you said like, just don't be the one crying the most, right? Like, don't be the one that's a mess the most. Don't be the one that is, you know, in your own stuff the most. It's really just that shift of focus, that continuum of focus, rather than that binary of all human or all machine.
But I think it speaks to why therapy is so important for everyone, because there is no way I could have went back to this job without like being under the care of like an amazing trauma-informed therapist. You have to do your work, or there's no way that you're not going to just bring all of your stuff back to the job. And again, it's like, yes, it informs my dad's death. My partner's death definitely inform who I am personally and professionally, but it cannot be all about me in the room. It's just, it's not appropriate, you know? And sometimes I have to remind myself it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
But that's what good therapy does for someone.
Good therapy. We love good therapy. Pro therapy
love
team.
Therapy.
Yay, therapy. And I like this isn't just like a switch that you flip to. I think that sometimes we can get into that idea that like I have to turn it off here and turn it on over here and all of these things. And like, this is really a community effort. This is a continuum of care. If we go back to our discussion about palliative care here, like your own personal life deserves palliative care in a sense, right? To have that community tending to you and listening to you and worrying, or maybe not worrying, but like tending to your emotional, relational, spiritual needs so that you can show up in the ways that you need to show up for yourself, for others, and for the world.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that continuity of care, because where I did my palliative care fellowship, I ended up staying on as a surgeon. And so the nursing staff knew me as a palliative care fellow. And then, you know, the next month here I was as a trauma surgeon, and they were confused. And they used to ask me all the time, what hat are you wearing? Are you coming in as a palliative care doctor or as a surgeon? No one asked me that anymore, because really, when I think of palliative care, it's just this continuum of care. I can operate on you. I can deal with the complications. And then if at some point your goals of care shift and we decide we really just want to focus on comfort, I can like transition you into hopefully a peaceful and beautiful death. Palliative care really, in the perfect world, we call it primary palliative care, should be woven into every medical specialty.
Yeah. Amen, sister.
Thank
There's
you.
That nimble flexibility of skilled response. We had the co-founders of the New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care on a while ago, and Kosh and Paley Ellison said, like, we talk about work-life balance all the time, but there is one life. There is one life. And we are our professional selves and our personal selves and our relational selves all the time in differing, I don't know, titrations, maybe, if we want to use another silly word in here. But I love that. And that's really just what you just described, right, is that everything shows up everywhere, a real fluidity and flexibility with our skill sets and how we respond to what's in front of us. I love that.
I love that idea of it's just where you're putting your focus at the moment, you know?
So one last question before we close up today. What do you wish other surgeons or medical providers knew about palliative care?
Well, one, I always say you do not have to be board certified in hospice and palliative medicine to do this good work. You know, when I think about primary palliative care, having the skills to do basic symptom management, to speak just even about basic goals of care, advanced directives, knowing a little bit about the Medicare hospice benefit and who qualifies, and then really being able to say, okay, I'm out of my comfort zone. This person really needs a fellowship trained palliative care provider, is really all you need to know. I mean, you don't need to know much. And then two, I think the palliative care skills are skills like anything else. So, you know, if you want to be a good surgeon, you have to practice. If you want to be good at putting in central lines, you have to practice. If you want to be good at running a family meeting, you have to practice. And one of the best ways to learn is just to watch other masters at work. And so I always say, if you consult palliative care, you should go and watch them have a family meeting and you'll learn a lot. For years, all I knew was what I learned in my fourth year of medical school. And that got me through all of residency, was 1 month of what I learned watching other people do what they do.
Yeah, practice is important. We're actually going to get into that in our questions to carry with you at the end of the show. But for now, I think this is a really beautiful end note for our time here together. We're going to link to your website, to your Twitter feed, because that's where we met. But would you please tell everybody where they can find you, your website, your podcast, and any other information you want them to know?
Sure thing. So you can find me on my website. It's redhoffmanmd.com. I'm also the co-founder of the Surgical Palliative Care Society. So if you want to know more about that society, you can look into our website at spcsociety.com. You can find me on Twitter at redmdnd for naturopathic doctor. And then I also run the @SurgePalCare Twitter feed, where we feature a lot of research articles about surgery and palliative care.
Awesome. So of course,
I also have a podcast called the Surgical Palliative Care Podcast that you can find on Apple Podcasts.
So many ways to interact with Dr. Redhoffman, everybody. I kept thinking that she was done with her list, but there are so many amazing ways to connect with her. And of course, we will link to all of those in the show notes. Coming up next, everybody, your weekly questions to carry with you and how you can send in your questions for us to use on the show. Don't miss that part, friends. We will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Each week, I leave you with some questions to carry with you until we meet again. It's part of that whole this stuff gets easier with practice thing, and as Dr. Rhett Hoffman said, we both want you to practice. This week, a little research assignment. If you work in a hospital setting, go look up your palliative care department. If you work in healthcare but you're not attached to a hospital, look up your local hospital's palliative care department. Just check them out. Like, no pressure. Check them out. What are they doing? Are there any cool or interesting workshops going on? Familiarize yourself with the palliative care work going on all around you. It's often invisible until you actually look for it. No matter where you work, in healthcare or nowhere near healthcare, take some time to reflect on what palliative care really means at its root. It's the support and tending of emotional pain that can't easily be fixed, if it can be fixed at all. What areas of your life, or the lives of the people around you, might benefit from a palliative care style approach? I would super love to hear your responses to this week's questions to carry with you. Palliative care as a lens on life is a fascinating topic. I totally want to hear about it. You can tag me on social media at Refuge in Grief. Leave a review of the podcast with something you've learned in today's show or any of the other shows, or use the question submission form on the website to let me know what you find. You can do that at megandevine.co. Speaking of megandevine.co and that question submission form, this is your weekly reminder that I want to answer your questions on the show. This show is nothing without your questions. It is literally a Q&A show. You can ask me anything you'd like. Bring me your professional questions, your I'm trying hard to be a really good friend and I don't know how questions, your I'm overwhelmed with the pain of the world questions, and even your I bet you don't have a good solution for this one questions. I love a challenge. Let's talk it out. call us at 323-643-3768 and leave a voicemail. If you missed it, you can find the number in the show notes or visit megandevine.co. If you'd rather send an email, you can do that too, right on the website, megandevine.co. We want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. This show, this world, needs your questions. Together, we can make things better, even when we can't make them right. You know how most people are going to scan through their podcast app looking for a new thing to listen to, and they're going to see the show description for Hereafter with Megan Devine and think, I don't want to talk about that stuff. Well, here's where you come in. Your reviews let people know it really isn't all that bad in here. We talk about heavy stuff, but it's in the service of making things better for everyone, so everyone needs to listen. Spread the word in your workplace, in your social world, on social media, and click through to leave a review. Subscribe to the show, download episodes, and send in your questions. Want more Hereafter? Grief education doesn't just belong to end-of-life issues. Life is full of losses, from everyday disappointments to events that clearly divide life into before and after. Learning how to talk about all that without cliches or platitudes or simplistic think positive posters is an important skill for everyone. Find trainings, workshops, books, and resources for every human trying to make their way in the world after something goes horribly wrong at megandevine.co. And a special note, there is a clinical workshop coming up on April 1st, 2022, then another one on April 29th, so be sure to check megandevine.co for all those details. Hereafter with Megan Devine is written and produced by me, Megan Devine. Executive producer is Amy Brown. Co-produced by Tanya Juhas and Elizabeth Fazio. Edited by Houston Tilley. With studio support by Chris Urin. Music provided by Wavecrush.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.